This has been a really busy weekend for us, coming and going, speaking and preaching and coming and going. Well, the first series of holy days are over, with the days of unleavened bread ending last night, as Dirk mentioned in his sermonette. We can all go back to sinning now. Just kidding. It's actually the opposite of that. God wants us actually to become transformed as a result of observing these days of unleavened bread for the last 7 days and getting sin out of our life, and as we heard in the sermonette, putting sincerity and truth back into our lives. Let's first turn to Jeremiah chapter 18 as we begin today. Jeremiah chapter 18. Before I begin reading in Jeremiah 18, though, I want to share a story with you. It is the story of the vase. A grandfather and grandmother were in a gift shop looking for something to give their granddaughter for her birthday. Suddenly, the grandmother spots a beautiful vase and says to her husband, "Look at this lovely piece of work." And her husband picks it up, looks at it, and says, "You're right. This is one of the loveliest vases I think I've ever seen." At that point, something remarkable happened. Something that could only happen probably in a child book story. The vase started to speak. And the vase said to the grandparents, "Thank you for the compliment. But I wasn't always this beautiful." Instead of being surprised that the vase was talking to the grandfather, the grandfather asked a question of the vase. "What do you mean when you say you weren't always beautiful?" "Well," says the vase, "once I was just an ugly, soggy lump of clay." But one day, some man with dirty, wet hands put me in a big wad and stuck me on a wheel. Then he started turning me around and around and around, and I was getting so dizzy I couldn't see straight. So I started yelling at the man, "Stop, stop." But the man with the dirty hands just kept going, and he said, "No, not yet." Then he started to poke me and punch me, and it hurt all over. "Stop, stop," I cried. But the man said, "No, not yet." Each time when I thought he was through, he would do something strange with his face, and he would just crumble me up again, roll me back up, punch and poke me, and stick me back on the wheel and start spinning again. But finally, after all this, he did stop. But then something much worse. He put me into a furnace, and it got hotter and hotter and hotter until I couldn't stand it. "Stop, stop," I cried. But the man just said again, "No, not yet." Finally, when I thought I was going to burn up, the man took me out of the furnace. What a relief. Then some short lady came over and started to paint me. And the fumes got so bad they made me feel sick. I thought I was going to faint. "Stop, stop," I cried to her. She said, "No, not yet." And she kept painting. Finally, she did stop. But then she gave me back to the man, and he put me back into that awful furnace again. This time, it was much hotter than before. "Stop, stop," I cried out. But the man once again said, "No, not yet." Finally, he took me out of the furnace, set me down, and let me cool. When I was completely cool, a pretty lady put me on this shelf next to this mirror. When I looked at myself in the mirror, I was amazed. I could not believe what I saw. I was no longer ugly, soggy, dirty. I was beautiful, firm, clean. I cried for joy. It was then that I realized all that pain was worthwhile. Without it, I would still be ugly, a soggy lump of wet clay. It was then that all the pain took on new meaning for me. The pain had passed, but the beauty it brought has still remained. Let's now take a look at Jeremiah 18. But let's look at Jeremiah 18 in the context of the story that I just read to you. Here in Jeremiah 18, we'll see Jeremiah was a prophet sent to the nation of Judah to warn them and to plead with them to stop sinning. Because God said if they kept sinning the way they were, God was going to bring some destruction their way. He was trying to get them to turn back to God so God wouldn't bring the punishments upon them that he said was going to take place if they didn't quit sinning. In the sense, this message that he was given here is their final warning by God. I'd like to begin in Jeremiah 18 and verse 1. Jeremiah 18 and verse 1. The word which came to Jeremiah from the Lord, saying, "Arise and go down to the potter's house, and there I will cause you to hear my words." Now, Jeremiah apparently knew right where to go because God gave him no more instructions than that. You see, pottery making was a big business back in those days in Jerusalem. Virtually everybody had multiple pieces of pottery in their homes because that's the only thing they had to store stuff in. So everybody knew what a potter was. They knew what pottery was. It's not as big an industry today in relationship to other industries that we deal with. But we've all probably have a basic understanding of what it's like that God's going to be talking about here, of going through the pottery process of developing pottery on a potter's wheel. God is going to use this illustration to teach us how he works with people. Let's continue. Verse 3. "Then I went down to the potter's house, and there he was, the potter, making something at the wheel." I would imagine most of us have sat at a potter's wheel or seen it or seen a picture of it. How many of you have ever sat at a potter's wheel and thrown some pottery on the wheel? Let me see your hands. A fair number of you. I've actually done it myself, too. The whole process is really quite simple. There's a round wheel on top of this table, and it's connected vertically by an axle to another wheel on the bottom. That's the way the ancient ones were made. And the bottom wheel was used by the potter to spin with his feet or her feet. They get it going, and at whatever speed they would make the bottom wheel go, the top wheel would spin with the clay on top. Nowadays, they have electric ones, which is the type that I had, which has got a variable speed control. And I sat at the potter's wheel, and I actually tried to make some pottery doing this. What you do is you take a wad of this clay, as big a wad as you think you're going to need for whatever it is you're going to make, and you mix it and mingle it and put it in a ball of some sort, and you try to set it as centrally located in that wheel as you possibly can. The closer to center you are, the better your chance you're going to have of really making a nice piece of pottery. If it is not centered, and you start spinning that wheel, and you're not holding onto that piece of pottery, you're going to have pottery flying everywhere. Actually, you're going to have mud flying everywhere. The pottery's not made yet. Jeremiah probably had seen a clay potter making pottery many, many times in his life, and he's probably wondering, why are you sending me down to this guy? He's just a potter making pottery at a wheel. This time, I'm sure he was probably wondering why God was going to do this and how he's going to learn from this. But let's see what transpires here. Verse 4. "And the vessel that he, the potter, made of clay was marred in the hand of the potter as he was shaping it. So he made it again into another vessel that it seemed good to the potter to make." Now, what just happened here? Well, the potter sees a defect in the piece of clay that he's modeling. So he takes the wad of clay, if he sees the defect and he feels like it's deep enough, he'll pick the piece of clay up and he'll re-wad it, reshape it, and recenter it on the wheel to get it going again, see if he can get that flaw out of that clay. Put down the ball again and start all over again. The skilled potter works with his clay and shapes it and molds it and puts pressure on it from different points until he finally gets that piece of clay to the position that he wants and that he needs. He works at it and he works at it and he works at it until the pottery that he's working with pleases him. And the really good potters can see the slightest of imperfections. They've got the eye for it, and I actually have had a potter tell me, I can feel it before I can see it. So they're literally, with the touch and feel of their hands, they're feeling the potters, they're shaping it and forming it, and they can tell when there's an imperfection in that clay. When they discover an imperfection, they always stop. And maybe even getting to the point where they realize that I've gotten this thing this far, but I've got this imperfection is not going to work. They'll lift it up off the wheel, smash it back down in the ball, and start all over again. Let's see what God was trying to teach Jeremiah here as we continue. Verse 5. Then the word of the Lord came to me saying, listen to this. O house of Israel, can I not do with you as this potter? Can't I treat you just like this potter's treating the clay? Says the Lord, look, as the clay is in the potter's hands, so are you in my hand, O house of Israel. What was it that Jeremiah and ultimately us needed to learn from this episode with the potter? Well, first of all, God is showing us that he is the potter, the creator of whatever it is he's doing. He's the one with the power. He's the one with the plan. He's the one with the means to accomplish what he's ultimately after in each and every person's life. It's sort of like God saying this to us. I am the master builder or engineer of your life. The one who works with your mind. The one who works with your heart, your character, your attitude. I'm the one who will shape you. I will shape you into what I know you can become and what I want you to be. But unlike the potter, God's creation eventually turns out perfect. He started mankind as a cup of clay, a clump of lifeless clay, just like this bag you see right in front of you today. God started shaping a man. And when he shaped it into the shape of his own, what did he do? He breathed into it, and Adam came into being from clay. Yes, God is the potter, and we are the clay. And secondly, I believe God is telling us something else through this whole process as well. God is merciful, and God is patient with us in all of our defects or sins in our life, if you will. He doesn't just throw us away when he sees that we're marred. He doesn't just throw us away when he sees there's a defect. He doesn't just get rid of us because there's a flaw. No, he continues to work with us. He may have to reshape the ball of the clay time and again, but he's not going to quit working with us. He works with us over and over again until he gets what he wants out of the clay, until he is happy with the results, not us. Let's continue in verse 7. Remember, God had just told him that they were the clay in potter's hands. He goes on in verse 7, he says, the instant I speak concerning a nation, concerning a kingdom, concerning people, to pluck it up, to pull it down, or to destroy it, if I decide to judge somebody because of their behavior, because of what's going on in their life, if that nation against whom I have spoken turns from its evil, I will relent of the disaster that I thought to bring upon it. If our sins are repented of, God says, I will forgive you and I will move forward in reforming the clay. Now the converse of that concept in verse 9. And the instant I speak concerning a nation and a kingdom, to build it, to plan it, to really take it to the next level of perfection, if it does evil in my sight so that it does not obey my voice, then I will relent concerning the good which I said I would benefit it. See, God is looking for ways to bless us. And sometimes we start getting blessings and blessings and more blessings and more blessings, and we start thinking, hey, well, I'm doing pretty good. I've really got this Christianity thing together. And we start becoming maybe a little more laxed in our approach to things. Maybe we don't take the holy days to heart like we might have. Maybe we come off of the days of unleavened bread and think, okay, now I can put leavening back into my life. Then sin will start creeping back in my life. And God's saying, you know what? That's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about wanting to build you up, wanting to bless you, wanting to give to you. But if you're going to turn your back on me and go down a different path, I'll just take away the blessings. If the defects are too great, God may even choose to pick that piece of clay up off of that wheel and smash it down again, reshape it, and start all over again. Once he starts to work with us, he stays with us. He doesn't stop. And he continues until he has achieved what he is after. Here in Jeremiah 18, God is wanting Jeremiah to tell the people of Judah that he will work with them so long as they cooperate with him. Work with me. Do what I'm asking you to do. God keeps showing us that he is going to make a change. God is going to show us that he's going to make a change on the way that he works with us, the way that he deals with us, based on the decisions that we make. See, if we make godly decisions, God works with us one way. If we make decisions that are not decisions of character, like we heard yesterday in the sermon, God will start working with us a different way, because he's got to change the path. Remember I told you yesterday, God takes us from point A to point B. And point A for every single person in this room is different. Where you started. Point B, where you're going, is different. And God knows what he needs to get you from point A to point B in your life. And God is going to get you to point B. He may take drastic measures. As you're going to hear about in a sermonette next week. I asked Ken Blanchard to give the sermonette he gave today in Reno, to come out and give the sermonette next week in Sacramento. It was that good of a sermonette. It was superb. And it's talking a little bit about Job and how the extreme measures of what God had to go through to Job to get Job's attention. God said, I'm going to finish this. I started with this. I'm going to end with that. And nobody's going to stop me. Let's turn to Isaiah 29. Isaiah 29. God many times points out that we, the human clay in his hands, have a tendency to get things a little bit out of proportion, a little bit out of perspective. We don't quite understand the relationship that's going on here. And a real problem can be that we see nothing wrong with the actions that we're performing in our lives, the way we're behaving, the way we're acting, until he chooses to remove a blessing. And then all of a sudden, we're without something that we had before, maybe. And we ask ourselves the question, why me? Why did this have to happen to me? Then we suffer because of decisions that we've made. Here in Isaiah 29, God is confronting the sinful people during Isaiah's day. It's interesting how God puts it here in Isaiah. He begins by reminding us of the wonderful thing that God is doing in our lives, and then he takes it a little step further. Let's begin in Isaiah 29 and verse 14. Isaiah 29 and verse 14. Therefore, behold, I will again do a marvelous work among this people. I've got some great plans for you. A marvelous work and a wonder. For the wisdom of their wise men shall perish, and the understanding of their prudent men shall be hidden. But, the caveat, verse 15. Woe to those who seek deep to hide their counsel far from the Lord. They turn away from God. They go after other counselors. And their works are in the dark, and they say, who sees us? Who knows what's going on? Again, I refer back to the sermon yesterday. You can't hide from God. I can't hide from God. But you know, our craziness of our reasoning and our minds as human beings, sometimes, somehow, we think we can get away with something because nobody else is watching, because nobody else is there when we're going to do it. And that is such a weird way to look at things, to think that we can do something in private. We can't. There's not one thing you or I can do in private. We can do it physically in private, but you can never do it spiritually in private. Never. God is always watching. Then Isaiah brings up the concept of the potter and the clay again. Verse 16. Surely you have things turned around. God says through Isaiah. Shall the potter be esteemed as the clay? For shall the thing say of him who has made it, he did not make me? Or shall the thing formed of him that formed it say, he has no understanding? You know, when you read that, it's sort of like a difficult thing to try to interpret what all that means and says. Let me reread verse 16 from another translation of the Bible, the New Living Translation. I think it really makes this verse ring true. You can follow along if you want. Here's verse 16 from the New Living Translation of Isaiah 29. How stupid can you be? He's the potter, and certainly greater than you. You are only the vases that he makes. Should the thing that was created say to the one who made it, he didn't make us? Does a vase ever say, the potter who made me is stupid? God's basically saying the clay is not going to be permitted to talk back to me or to question me. It's not going to be permitted to challenge me or to think that it's smarter than me, because it's not. God's the potter, we're the clay. And God made sure we understood that relationship. Let's turn to 1 Peter 5 now. 1 Peter chapter 5. But before I turn to and read 1 Peter 5, let me help us all to better understand all of this pottery talk. Let's look at the process a potter uses in sculpturing a beautiful piece of pottery. The potter's main ingredient is what's in this bag, clay. A true potter searches for the right kind of clay. There's many different types of clay. The typical clay in the ground is not suitable for a potter. But the clay that they dig down into the earth and dig out of the ground is what they are after. And they find these little patches of it all around the world. Then it is brought to the vicinity of the potter, and it's allowed to sit there in the potter's shed for weeks. It sort of matures. The material is then dumped into a cement-lined tank or a wooden trough and covered completely with water, all of the clay. When it sits there long enough and all the lumps have softened, they are stirred into the water until they've all disintegrated into this slimy mud that is formed. It's a tub of mud. It then sits there for another 6 months or more before it is ready for use, because all of the impurities fall out of the suspension. They go to the bottom, and there's less impurities into the clay. The longer it sits, the more improved it becomes. In other words, the clay, as it was in its original form and its original way that it was taken out of the ground, is basically worthless. It must be transformed into a usable state, and that is the process that takes effort and energy and time by the potter himself. This is a great example of us as the sinners God has called. We are worthless in our natural condition. However, God is able to see the beautiful vases that we can become. And that's what he's working on. He's creating beauty in each human being he calls. Therefore, he begins the process that will bring into place the usefulness of the clay. He dug us out. He dries us up. He washes us up clean, purifies us, and then starts working with us. The next process of becoming a beautiful vessel is that after the clay has been cleaned and processed, the clay is then laid on a table and beaten with a wooden mallet. The powder does this to remove any air bubbles that might be trapped within the clay, which is an impurity and a defect. If he doesn't, the air bubble will form a pocket and it will produce a weak spot in the pottery, and cause the vessel to be fragile and maybe even unusable completely and possibly even blow up when put into the furnace. This describes the trials, the calamities, the hurt, the sorrow, the pains that we encounter in life. Next, we have the wheel, the potter's wheel. Symbolic of the circumstances and situation that life brings our way. Sometimes we look at life as just being a big circle of one trial after the other. We're like going around in a circle, chasing our tails, trial after trial after trial after trial. Sometimes the clay doesn't like to be shaped and it fights back in a bit and it starts wobbling on the wheel, instead of letting the potter shape it the way the potter wants it to be shaped. But we must remember that the potter controls the speed of the wheels, and they only rotate according to his will. We must never forget that God is still in control regardless of what we are facing in our lives. Stay on the wheel. Sometimes we want to jump off the wheel before we are formed into the beautiful vase that God has intended for us because we get tired of being on the wheel. It's too much stress, too much trauma. Then there's his hands. While the clay spins on the wheels, it's never out of contact with the potter's hands. The potter's hands are constantly on the clay. He is in constant control of what's going on with the shape and forming of that clay, molding, shaping, bringing that clay to the perfect position, the perfect shape, the perfect shape of what he's looking for. And it's all through his guidance. If he were to ever remove his hand from the clay would spin off the wheel. Because his hand is resting on the lump of clay, the potter often sees a flaw because he's so intimately involved in the clay's process. And when he sees the flaw, he determines that the clay may need to be reshaped and remolded again. He may pick it up off of the wheel, clump it together and get it back on the wheel and start shaping it again. He does this until he can make it produce the beautiful vase that he wants, one that satisfies him, not the clay itself. When the vessel is marred, the potter does not throw the clay away. He's invested way too much in this clay. He's dug it up, he's dried it, he's soaked it, he's cleansed it, he's molded it, he's shaped it, he's beat all the impurities out of it. He got it to a really certain point, and then there's a flaw. He doesn't just take it off the wheel and throw it in a dumpster and go get another clump of clay. He never does that. What he does is he gets the clay up, and he says, okay, I got to reshape this and start over again. I can totally identify to that in my life. Whenever we have strayed away from God and God's not finished with us, God eventually has a way of getting our attention. What he does is he gets your attention, he brings you back, reforms you, reshapes you, puts you back on the potter's wheel, and starts working with us all over again. He's very patient, the potter. He's always seeing the finished work. He's got it in his mind's eye. He knows where that pottery needs to be. We have no clue where he's taken that pottery. But he has it perfectly in mind. He has this beautiful vase divined in his mind. And that's where he's taken that piece of pottery. Then we have the oven. The temperatures must be so hot that it burns out all the left impurities in the clay and creates a new bonded substance. There's a chemical transformation that takes place in the clay. Too much heat, too fast, and it cracks and falls apart. Sometimes the clay thinks it can't take all of that heat. But the potter knows the degree of heat to set and also how long it needs to stay in the heat. You know, when I looked at that and saw it, I thought, well, that's a pretty interesting set of analogies that God has chosen to teach Jeremiah about how he's working with people, how he's developing human beings. Let's take a look at 1 Peter 5 now. Pretty interesting. And it shows how God's willing to work with us in spite of the flaws that he finds, in spite of the flaws that come to the surface later on. Here in 1 Peter 5, Peter points out something that sort of puts all this whole thing together from a perspective that's easier to understand. 1 Peter 5, let's begin in verse 6. Peter says, therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand, the potter's hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time, casting all your care upon him, for he cares for you. He is creating beauty. That was his intention from the moment he put the clay on the wheel. Create a beautiful vase. Let's go back to Isaiah now, Isaiah 45. Isaiah chapter 45. We'll see here in Isaiah, he shows us how some don't look to the potter the same way the potter or creator would like to be looked at. God is always working with us, and sometimes we just don't like the way he's doing it. We don't like the pushing. We don't like the pulling. We don't like the spinning. We don't like the heat. We resist. We struggle. We may even fight back because we don't like what he's doing. We don't know where he's going with it. God knows where he's going with it. He's got a plan for each and every one of us. He's taking us from point A to point B, and he is going to get us to point B by molding, shaping, and helping us to develop the way he wants us to. Because we don't like the path that he has taken us down, sometimes we fight back. Here in Isaiah 45, Isaiah addresses this sort of attitude and approach to life. Let's pick it up on Isaiah 45 and verse 9. Isaiah 45 and verse 9. Isaiah starts here, he says, woe to him who strives with his maker. Let the potsherd strive with the potsherds of the earth. Don't fight back against the potter. Shall the clay say to him who forms it, what are you making? Maybe you're making the wrong thing. Or shall the handiwork say, he has no hands, he doesn't know what he's doing. This can't be the way he wants me to be going. Woe to him who says to his father, what are you begetting? Or to the woman, what have you brought forth? This was Isaiah's way of showing us that some resist the creator, some resist the potter, as he works out creating that perfectly beautiful vase in each and every one of our lives. As we get ready to close, let's go to Isaiah 64, just a few pages to your right. Isaiah 64. As we just read, and also a little bit earlier, we've seen some negative approaches toward the potter. Let's look at a positive one now. This relates back to what we just read in 1 Peter 5 and verse 6. This verse here in Isaiah 64 is a really wonderful verse and one that I think that all of us wants to emulate. I believe that God responds very favorably to us when this is our approach toward him, especially when it's our approach toward him as he molds and shapes each and every one of our lives, which is what he's doing every single day. Don't forget, Romans 8:28 is still in the Bible. Everything that happens to us, everything that goes on in our lives, God can make it come to good. And many times, God allows things to happen to us so he can get our attention, so he can get us to see some aspect of our being or our behavior that we haven't seen before, so that we can work on it, change it, mold it, shape it, so that he can get that beautiful vase where he wants it to be. Let's begin here in Isaiah 64 in verse 8. Isaiah 64 in verse 8. But now, O Lord, you are our Father. We know we're the clay, and you are the potter, and we are the work of your hand. We're willing to submit to you. We're willing to let you take us where you want us to go. Do not be furious, O Lord, nor remember iniquity forever. Indeed, please look. We are your people. We want to be your people. We want you to work with us. We want you to shape us. We want you to mold us. We want you to turn us into that beautiful vase that you intended when you first put us on that potter's wheel. We have become the beautiful vases that you have created. Lastly, let's turn to Philippians 1. Philippians chapter 1. Just like the potter carefully chooses his clay, God has carefully chosen each and every one of us sitting here in this room. Let me show you how carefully he selected. If we were to make an assumption about all the churches of God in the world, I'm going to make an assumption. I may be off by, I don't know, a lot, but I know I'm not off by that much. Let's assume for discussion's sake that there's 100,000 existing children of God on the face of the earth right now. Called of God, baptized, hands laid on, they've got God's Spirit running through their body. How many people are on this earth? 6.5 billion. Do you realize how small that percentage is? It's infinitesimal. God looked on that mass of humanity, and he looked down on this earth, and he dug and chose to pull you out as a lump of clay that he was going to work with. That's how unique it is. It's more unique than the clay that the potters of the specialty potters of this world go after finding their clay for their pottery. We are much more unique to God than that. We didn't volunteer for this any more than the physical clay chose to play with the clay potter. There's a clear choice that God has made in beginning his work in us. It is a choice that he will not abandon. He will complete the pottery project that he has started in each and every one of us. Even when he finds flaws and defects along the way, he knows how to make a lump of clay into a beautiful vase. Let's pick it up in Philippians 1, verse 3. Philippians 1, verse 3. I thank my God upon every remembrance of you, always in every prayer of mine, making request for you of all joy, all with joy, for your fellowship in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. Brethren, God knows exactly what he's doing. God has got the process of turning clay into a beautiful vase down perfect. He knows how to make you and me into a beautiful vase standing in his kingdom. And as he works with each one of us, his beautiful vases, he's got in his mind exactly what he wants to see in each and every one of us when it's completed. And he said he'll never quit working with us. Have a great Sabbath.